This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Whether you're just tootling over to the local swimming hole with your towel and a snack rolled up in your front basket, or zipping up a full spandex suit and shaving your arm hair for better aerodynamics, this is a great time of year to get on a bike and hit the road. Or the trail, for that matter. Vermont cyclists have an embarrassment of riches, and we're going to celebrate them today with a freewheeling discussion of all things that can be done on two wheels. From road safety and sharing space with cars, to the cool new technology bike racers are discovering, to the wild new sport of cyclocross. We're going to talk about all of it, and we want to hear from you. If you're not on your bike right now, call 1-800-639-2211 and let us know what you love about cycling. In fact, we heard earlier from Lou with the Lake Champlain Bikeways, who said, "I can't call in. A group of retirees called the Silver Spokes are going to be riding out of Kingsland Bay State Park at noon. I'll have to settle for listening at 7 p.m. So for those of you who are not currently out on the road or trails, our number again is 1-800-639-2211. I'm joined in the studio by Andy Bishop, a former pro cyclist who competed in both road cycling and mountain biking. He now coaches champion mountain biker and Vermonter Leah Davison. Andy, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, it's my honor to be here.
And we're also joined today by Emily Bodeker, executive director of Local Motion. That's a bike advocacy organization in Burlington that promotes riding for fun and for transportation. Emily, it's nice to have you on the program.
Great to be here, Jane. Thanks so much.
So first of all, you know, there used to be this sort of dichotomy. You were either a road cyclist or a mountain biker, and you had to pick one, and you sort of felt like you were part of a specific group. And Andy Bishop, I understand that's not necessarily the case anymore, and you're sort of a representative of that.
Well, fortunately, that is the case, but I have to confess my sins that when I first was a road cyclist, I looked down on those guys with jean shorts and, you know, questionable, you know, athletic pursuits with the mountain biking. But it all started, like, I was living in Europe and racing big races like the Tour de France. And then my wife and I moved to Vermont just for winters. People thought we were crazy. And then it just slowly evolved, like, that people said, you know, you should try mountain biking. I tried it. And then I ended up making a switch, you know, after 8 years on the road.
Emily Bodeker, not so much the Tour de France for you as a cycler?
Not so much the Tour de France, no. I haven't actually put that on my bucket list yet. But, you know, honestly, we look at cyclists in two camps. You're either currently a cyclist or you've got that happy chance to become a cyclist. And so with that, Local Motion's approach is really to find a way in which everybody, in whatever shape or form is right for you, can say yes to getting on a bicycle.
Why? Why should anybody get on a bike?
Okay, first of all, it's just so much fun to be out there. And we can certainly get a little serious for a moment. We can talk about the health benefits for the individual, the economic benefits for the community. We can talk about transportation benefits and climate change. But the bottom line is we've got an incredible natural resource, our state of Vermont. And whether it's because you would like some fresh air and 5 minutes exercise to go to the grocery store on your bike, or if you want to have a goal of climbing one of the gaps in the mountains, doing the Lamb Tour, Lincoln Appalachian, Middlebury Gap, then there's so many opportunities for every single person right here at home.
Andy Bishop, what do you say about that? I mean, it can be intimidating talking to somebody who's a pro and who's had a career in this field. But what about the casual cyclist?
Oh, I actually think exactly like Emily. I think that riding the bike every day or just casually is the essence of cycling. And while in the past I was an elite level cyclist, I'm far removed from that. And I just love being out on the, you know, with my family. In fact, I just did this fantastic, it was called the Tour de Champlain on Friday, which actually connected with Local Motion. It's for Raymond McCarthy Foundation, and they raise, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. And one of their causes is to help rebuild the causeway, you know, with the ferries and everything that Local Motion does. So, and that was just a family event. All my two children and my wife all went out. There's 150 people, incredibly enthusiastic, that just love being outside. And to me, that's what cycling's all about.
Can you just tick off a couple of other cool events that you know of that happen in Vermont around cycling, whether they are things like the Tour de Champlain, where it you can do it no matter what level you are, or if it's something more like the Catamount Pro Classic happening this weekend?
Well, that's a fantastic event that we're having coming up this weekend. And I have been associated with Catamount Outdoor Family Center for years, and I'm on the board there. there. And it's one of the few resources that I've ever been to anywhere in the world that has such fantastic dedication to open land use, but for recreation and educational purposes. At the same time, they have big events like this race that's coming up, which will feature some of the best women in the entire world. Like, they're racing, and some of the best guys as well.
Including Leah Davidson.
Well, Leah Davidson is number one in my book. But,
and number one in the country right now.
Yeah, she just won national championships last week, which was an amazing accomplishment because she had hip surgery just at the end of January. So her dedication and fortitude to pushing through and rehabbing and all the people that helped her to get there was just phenomenal. That, and this was one of her goals, which was a far-reaching, pretty pie-in-the-sky, like, wow, you have to really, you know, work hard to do this. And she ended up winning, and it was a fantastic day for her.
And she's going to be back at the Catamount Pro Classic defending her title. I saw her race last year. That was a pretty fun event to watch.
Yeah, it'll be a good race. So I encourage anybody, you don't have to be a racer to come out and enjoy. In fact, like, one of the most incredible, you know, testimonies of how beautiful cycling is to go watch and see this group called the Little Bellas. There are all these girls from 14 and under go out and cheer, and you will never see a better cheering, more enthusiastic squad than those group of girls. Oh, it's fantastic.
The Little Bellas is actually a group that was started by Leah and her sister Sabra to try to get young girls into cycling, into mountain biking, and also, of course, teach them skills like self-confidence and growth. Emily Boedeker, what about other events for you and other things like what Andy's talking about that can get lots of different types of people mm-hmm. into cycling?
So there's a few things that we do. One thing is Cole's Kids Bike Smart program that Local Motion runs. And with this, we have two trailers that literally go all over Vermont to schools. So schools are, they sign up for the program. We try and connect with also the Safe Routes to School program. Teachers are trained about how to teach bike skills as part of a phys ed class. So you book. We bring the trailer. It has all the bikes you might possibly need. It has balance bikes for those kids who've not quite got the hang of it. And so each year, we're able to introduce and to train 5,000 kids in Vermont about how to ride a bike. Now, once your child's feeling comfortable on a bike, that opens up so many possibilities for the family to ride together. And I'll put a little plug in as well for those adults who might not feel as comfortable as they want to go out with their kid. Come on down to Local Motion's Trailside Center. We pride ourselves in getting anybody and everybody on a bike. And so from that, you as a family can then create your own event this year. And whether your own event is taking part in a family mountain bike event like the ones run by the Montpelier Area Mountain Bike Association, having a trip up to Burke, or setting a family goal that you might ride out on the Colchester Causeway and ride the Local Motion bike ferry that Andy talked about earlier. So I'd say to those listening, make your own event this summer.
All right, I'm going to read a couple of emails from people who are making their own events. Heidi is from Burlington, but she's actually cycling across the country right now, and she wrote from the Erie Canal, and she says, we've only been on the cross-country corridor for about 1 week, and we're learning that long-distance cyclists are a tribe. It's pretty customary when you see cyclists coming in the other direction, loaded up with all the bags and gear, to stop and check in, exchange information about campsites, bike shops, laundromats, good coffee shops, and saddle sore remedies. Advice to those making the journey, be prepared to come the closest you can to being that kid on summer vacation, riding your purple Huffy with the banana seat and feeling freedom. And we got a note from Lee in Burlington who says, my husband John and I love road biking so much that we got married on a 100-mile ride called the Mad River Century. We biked the first 25 miles or so from Warren to Montpelier as an unmarried couple, but we advertised the fact that we were riding down the aisle. I wore a veil attached to my white bike helmet with a bouquet on my handlebars, and John wore a corsage and a black bike helmet. Instead of a race number, which you see on the backs of cyclists, we each had a similarly sized sign that said almost on my back and married on John's back. In Montpelier, a justice of the peace met us for the ceremony. Then I switched the sign on my back to just, and John kept his sign, married, and off we went to ride the remaining 75 miles as newlyweds. Needless to say, we got a lot of congratulatory honks and waves from the motorists. I love that story.
That's a beautiful story.
Fantastic.
We're talking today about cycling. We're talking about all kinds of biking. So if you have a story to share, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your stories on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. And let's go quickly now to Putney, where the West Hill Shop has earned a reputation as a great resource for cyclists of all skill levels. Co-owner Jim Schweitzer joins us for a few moments to talk about new trends in gear and cycling technology. Jim, thank you so much for taking time out from the shop.
Oh, thank you for having us.
I understand that, you know, if you're somebody who has not put foot to pedal for 20 years and you could feel a little bit intimidated, there are some reasons to maybe try it again, some new technology for new cyclists, maybe more comfortable seats, et cetera.
Yeah, that's true. You know, either for beginners who have never been on a bike or somebody who's ridden but hasn't ridden in a long time, I think the biggest thing that's changed in bicycles is a big focus on comfort. And that has to do with frame geometry, where the frames are built to get you a little bit more upright in a more comfortable position, even on performance road bikes. There are designs that let you go fast, but in a more comfortable position. You know, road bikes 20 years ago or even 30 years ago were all about racing, and you had to be hunched way over. So that's a big change. And for beginners, the same thing is true. Upright position, contact points such as handlebars, grips, saddles, everything's really focus on making you comfortable so that when you buy that bike, you're going to keep on riding it because it's not going to hurt you.
What about shifting technology?
That's come a long way, too. Derailleurs have been around for many, many years, and the basic way they function hasn't necessarily changed, but the performance on how they work has improved hugely. So easy shifting, whether it's a thumb shifter or a shifter that's built into the brake lever, they just work really easy, so there's not a lot of effort to get that chain to move onto the gears.
For the real gearheads, Jim, what are people excited about in the cycling world?
You know, the gearheads, there's a lot of new development coming, I think, in road bikes specifically. Disc brakes are coming to the forefront for road bikes. They've been around in the mountain bike world for a long time, but now they're coming onto road bikes, both in cable activated, but even newer are hydraulic disc brakes. So they work really easily, fingertip precision in terms of getting the bike to brake. So that's one of the newer things. Frame technology, carbon fiber has been around for quite a while, but it seems to get better and better. Lighter, stiffer, stronger is kind of the switch on frames.
I hear, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier with Andy Bishop about how you don't have to be just a road biker or a mountain biker now. You can do both, and you can be part of both, and you can switch back and forth and cross-train. And I understand there's actually, you know, you just mentioned that the brakes have sort of shifted from one kind of technology to, you know, from just mountain bikes onto road bikes. Are you seeing a lot of that sort of crossover in the sport, that there are people are drawing from different varieties of bikes and technology to get what works for them?
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, there's bikes for every style of riding at this point, from just simple hybrids where you just want to go ride around town to, you know, endurance riding. The sort of the newest thing that we're seeing in our neck of the woods is gravel, what we call gravel road bikes, or what the industry calls gravel road bikes. And they're very similar looking to a road bike, but they're designed with clearance in the frame to run a little bit wider tire, and they're geared very low, so they're ideal for this neck of the woods where we actually in southern Vermont probably have more dirt roads than we do paved roads, and they're very hilly. So the bikes are designed to get you up the hills easily because the gears are very low, and you can run really fat tires on them, you know, 1 inch, 1.5 inch width, depending on the frame, so you have a little cushion there with the tires.
Jim, can you tell us a little bit about something else that you're seeing a lot of these days, the sport of cyclocross? Can you describe it, first of all, and then why are people getting into this?
So cyclocross is a It's a cycling racing sport that's been around probably going back to the 30s, coming out of Europe. And it was sort of a transition, a seasonal transition from the road racing scene in Europe, where these clubs would race all summer long, and in the fall and would come, and to get them, keep them sort of going, they started this sport called cyclocross. So it's the bikes themselves look similar to a road bike, very similar to what I just described in terms of these gravel road bikes, where there's clearance for wider tires. In terms of the racing course that cyclocross is run on, they're usually run on grass or dirt, sometimes in the woods, sometimes in fields, fairly short laps, so you're going around a lap in less than 10 minutes. It's a timed race, so depending on your category, you race for either 45 minutes or an hour. And the fun part about it is there's obstacles thrown in. So there's barriers that force the rider to get off his bike, run over the barrier, and get back on. There's other barriers that force the rider to get off and run up a hill or run upstairs. So it's kind of like an obstacle course on a bicycle. It's very fast, very high output of energy, and it's a great spectator sport because the course is so close and short that you can pretty much see everything either from one spot or easy to walk around the course and watch it.
That's Jim Schweitzer. He and his wife, Diney, own the West Hill Shop in Putney. Jim, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
We should mention as well that their shop, the West Hill Shop, actually hosts the state cyclocross championships in November. We are talking about cycling today. We'd love to hear from you if you have a story to share or if you have a question. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Andy Bishop, you know a bit about cyclocross, too. This is actually kind of a fast-growing part of the sport.
It is one of the fastest growing sports here in the U.S., you know, in terms of cycling. I've actually even done the West Hill Putney course, and it's one of the most exciting, you know, type of, you know, races that you can do because you have to approach these barriers. What Jim mentioned about there are these obstacles. What you don't realize is that you come in full speed to the obstacle and take one foot out of your pedal, and then right before you hit the obstacle, you unclick your other foot, and at the same time, you're lifting your bike and jumping over this obstacle. West Hill, or the Putney course, has this giant long hill that you have to carry your bike on your shoulder up this hill, running up the hill. So it's really exciting. Catamount Family Center has a weekly mountain bikes series like during the summer, and then that transitions in the fall to a 5-week cyclocross series, and it's meant for anybody from beginner bike racers. You don't have to be a pro or elite level cyclist. You can come out and then just have a lot of fun.
Sounds like it's kind of in the same realm as like the mud runs that people do, where there are all these obstacles and you're running through mud and muck, and it's not necessarily about getting the fastest time that you could possibly get on a running course. It's more about traversing these obstacles and having some fun. Is that sort of the same vein?
For a lot of people, I mean, when it comes down to the racing, then it is trying to win, but if for just going out and doing the obstacles, they never cancel a cyclocross race. So if one day it's sunny, the next day it could be snowing and you race in the snow and mud and muck.
Emily, would you consider doing a cyclocross race?
You know, I'll try anything once.
We are talking again about cycling today. I'd love to hear from many of you. We're getting some great emails coming in about why you like biking, why you like cycling, maybe some special events like a wedding proposal or a marriage, or if you're doing a cross-country bike tour, we've heard some from somebody who's doing that. You can share your thoughts with us on the Vermont Edition Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we are celebrating cycling, all kinds of cycling, whether you're into mountain biking, road racing, bike commuting, or all of the above. Give us a call and tell us what you love. Our number is 1-800-639-2211, or you can post on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Andy Bishop, former pro cyclist who competed in both road cycling and mountain biking, is with us. He now coaches champion mountain biker and Vermonter Leah Davison. And Emily Bodeker is executive director of Local Motion, a bike advocacy organization in Burlington that promotes riding for fun and for transportation. She's with us as well, and we're hearing from so many of you. Craig says a great biking opportunity is finally coming together in northern Vermont, the Lamoille Valley Rail Trail goes from St. Johnsbury to Swanton, about 98 miles. Not only is the surface appropriate for skinny tires, but the trail also provides access to great local dirt road and challenging trail riding in the rural towns along the trail. It's one of the most scenic rides in North America. Alfred posts to say, I rode avidly when I was a teenager in the 90s, had a good time. This spring, I finally bought a new bike, and I've been experiencing a bit of a renaissance with the sport. When I was a kid in the Northeast Kingdom, snowmobile trails were the extent of riding available to us. Today, I am blown away by the mountain biking community and the incredible network of trails throughout the state. And Alfred recommends the Millstone Trails Association in Barrie, the Vermont Mountain Biking Association, and the Vermont 50, a race in Brownsville this fall. And Ron says, Ron's from Jericho, and he writes in to say, I can't say enough about how much mountain biking has improved my fitness. I got involved in 2009 when I received a mountain bike as a gift. It's just so invigorating to be out in the forest challenging myself on trails that I never imagined I could ride only a few years ago. Look up the Vermont Mountain Bike Association or visit a local bike shop and ask about mountain biking. There are lots of folks out there willing to help you get started. Great comments there. And Andy Bishop, do you find that too, that people, if you just ask for help, you can have people help you get started? Because I think for some, it is a little bit intimidating.
Yeah, it, when you see people whizzing by on these shiny bikes and spandex, then people think, that's not really for me. And but no, it's great with like organizations like Local Motion, who like will do one-on-one, you know, training with people learning to ride a bike, to the bike shops, you know, the local bike shops like Ski Rack, Earl's, White's, like that. If anybody goes in, they'll take the time to help them fit onto a bike and make sure that it's comfortable. So it's really fantastic. There are so many people here that will help you, and because we're all part of the, we love cycling and anything, you know, to do with two wheels, it's just a blast to do.
And Emily Boedeker, I mean, you look at some surveys that have been done that ask people about biking and how they feel about it, and some people are obviously really into it, and then there's a really big chunk of people who say, yeah, you know, it sounds great, or maybe I do a little bit of it, but I'm also pretty cautious. And I understand that at Local Motion you're trying to sort of suss out why, whether it's about safety, sharing the road with cars, or maybe about those really shiny spandex suits and not wanting to squeeze your body into one of those. So how do you talk to people about their concerns?
Yeah, and that's the key word that you use, Jane, because there is from various different studies talking about different types of cyclists, apparently 60% of people who say interested but concerned. So yes, yeah, so we want to find out what those concerns are and remove those concerns. So safety is a very important factor. And do people feel comfortable on the roads? It's great if you've got a trail network close to you. It's great if you've got something like the Burlington or Stowe bike paths where you're separated from the traffic. But whether you're an on-road cyclist or whether you're more of a utilitarian, you need to feel comfortable on the road. So there's a lot that we can all do. We are all of us at various times bike riders and car drivers and cyclists. So understanding that we all have to abide by the rules of the road and having a courteous approach, whether you're driving that day or riding that day, that can go a long way to making sure that people feel safe. And there's also many different towns around and at the state level, VTrans, who are starting to look at what can we actually do on the roads themselves so that we can make a smoother shoulder, for example, and make a place that's more inviting and more clearer separation. So again, those concerns and anxieties can go away and that can be replaced by the fun.
Well, and you mentioned working on the roads. We got a note from Mark on Facebook who says, as a tour cyclist, I hope you will raise the issue of the low quality of Vermont roads and the all too often absence of shoulders. So you are working on that with VTrans?
Yeah, it's something that the VTrans is also very concerned about, and looking at ways in which, where there's an existing road base, where standard things could be done, such as always trying to pave and to skim the entire width, keeping that swept, making sure that we've got a clear line on the edge of the road, the fog line. So even where there might not be a dedicated bike lane, you can actually make that shoulder a much safer place. And so riders right now often might have to ride somewhat defensively and be more in the main roadway because there are potholes and things like that. So there are things that we can do with the way that we look after our roads today, whether it's a municipality or at the state level, to make sure it's safe and inviting for all travelers.
We got a note from Dan in Hyde Park who says it would also be wonderful powerful if you could remind listeners in automobiles that bicycles on the road should be treated just like a farm vehicle. Don't pass unless it's safe to do so. Blowing the horn and making hand gestures is not helpful. And bear in mind that under Vermont law, it is permissible for bicycles to ride two abreast. So good comments there to remember from Dan. Let's go to Carmen, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Carmen. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've gone on a few multi-day trips on a bicycle, and the amazing thing about that is because you are out in the open, you are very approachable, and everyone wants to come up to you and talk to you. Where are you coming from? Where are you going? Gee, do you need a place to stay? You can camp in my backyard. Do you need help with a route through our town? It's just an amazing way of traveling because you are approached by people and sometimes end up creating friendships along the way. Both that way, and there's an official way with a group called Warm Showers, where you post that people can camp in your backyard. We had visitors last night in our yard from, I don't even remember where. Over the weekend, I had a visitor from Korea, and earlier in the month, I had a couple from Australia stay in our backyard. So bicycling is a whole new world for me.
Oh, Carmen, thanks for sharing that. Appreciate that. And the organization that she mentioned there at the end is called Warm Showers. You can find it online if you're cycling and want a place to stay. Let's go to Nathan in Barrie. Hi, Nathan. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I heard about Millstone Trails earlier on the show, and I was calling to mention them. They're a great biking opportunity here in central Vermont, where one can bike, and there's a disc golf course, and the bike trails go around the historic quarries, so it's a great opportunity to learn about Vermont history and central Vermont culture while biking at the same time.
Nathan, thanks for that. Appreciate it. It's nice to have sort of a combination, I suppose. You can learn a little bit of history, maybe play some disc golf and get off your bike for a few minutes. Ken is calling in from Ticonderoga now. Hi, Ken. You're on the air.
Hi. I haven't ridden in years. 30 plus right now because I got run over in Miami. Bad motorist, shouldn't have been on the road, but hit me, knocked me off my 12 speed, skinned me up pretty good, survived it, you know. But prior to that, I'd ridden everywhere. That was my vehicle of choice at Cornell, up and down Gunshot Hill. I was in the best shape I'd ever been in. And I'd like to get back to that in my retirement years here. But I've got, I'm pulling up a little short because I still remember that skinning in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get past that point from anybody that's been, been on the ground? How do you get back in the saddle psychologically?
Ken, thanks for your comments, and I'm really sorry to hear that you were hit by a car. That's an awful thing to have happen. Let's get some thoughts from both Emily and Andy on how you can get back into it, because it sounds like Ken is eager to get started again. So, Emily, what's your advice?
Yeah, Ken, I'm sorry to hear about that experience, and I can totally understand how that would create a lot of anxiety to get over. You know, a couple of different things. I think a great thing to do for people, either because they've had an experience like Ken or because they have some concerns, is actually to connect with a local bike group. Green Mountain Bicycle Club is a big one around the state, but there are many other smaller groups. And so being able to go out in an organized ride, going out with a small group of people, others who are there looking out for any hazards, and can kind of give you a sense of comfort riding with not just people who can advise, but support in case there's any breakdowns of the tires or things like that. So I think that's a great way for people to get engaged. And also to look for places where you can start to ride again, where you can learn some of the skills yourself, where you can be on a bike path where there isn't traffic. Because even a simple thing like looking over your shoulder so you can check if there's traffic, if people don't quite have the skills, that can cause them to swerve. But there are easy things to do, like learning to look over your shoulder by leading with your chin first, and ways in which you can give yourself a greater degree of confidence that you can handle what's going to happen out there.
That's a good advice. So go somewhere where there aren't cars first. Get yourself sort of back in the saddle, as Ken said, and then maybe move over to the roads. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like starting first, like maybe one of these rail trails or the bike paths. There have been a huge growth in bike paths in the state, like since I moved here in the 90s. And so I think that would be a great place to start.
What about just the psychological part, not necessarily of the fear of cars, which would be certainly understandable, but just remembering how painful it can be to fall? I imagine, Andy, that you have fallen on your bike. Both road racing, we hear about horrible crashes in races like the Tour de France, but then also mountain biking certainly is a sport where people can go tumbling over the handlebars.
Yeah, and unfortunately that was always part of the racing that I had to deal with. And everybody does, no matter how good of a bike handler you are. And I'll have to make a plug, like, about wearing helmets always. So, you know, parents, it's good to see kids riding with their helmets, but when their parents aren't riding with it, it kind of makes me shudder because they could fall too, just as well. But the good thing about cycling is it's in general, it's a sport that's really easy on your body. There's not a lot of pounding. So if you haven't ridden for 30 years, it's actually really nice to go out on the bike. You stretch and it makes you feel better, whereas maybe running would be hard to pick up after 30 years and your knees would ache and stuff. So that would be my point, is to go out and be comfortable, you know, riding your bike without traffic first.
We got a note from Susan who says, "We're lucky enough to live within biking distance of the Charlotte Ferry. So in 2008, we took a family vacation without using a car by riding a loop that started with the ferry to Willsboro, New York. Then we rode up the lake on the New York side to the Plattsburgh Ferry to Grand Isle. From there, we used the bikeway and the bike ferry to head back towards home. The only downside was that the food options along the New York side weren't so great, but that didn't affect the great time that we all had, and it showed our children that you don't need a car to have a great vacation." Let's go to Robert, who's calling in from Stowe. Hi, Robert. We just got a couple seconds for you.
Thank you for taking my call. I bicycle in Stowe, and I have to say that although we live in a beautiful state, the roads and shoulders are falling apart in our neck of the woods, and it's beginning to become quite dangerous to do road biking. I've had several close calls. Many of my friends and acquaintances that bicycle have had close calls. And, for example, in Route 100, they just did some patching north of Stowe and didn't do it the full width. It makes it virtually impossible to ride safely on a major state highway like Route 100.
Yeah, so Robert, I hear what you're saying there. You know, certainly it's tough when you look at the roads. Drivers complain, runners complain, and for cyclists, you're looking at not just conditions that might make it hard to ride, but conditions that can make it dangerous, as Emily was saying, having to ride more defensively and be really concentrating on the road conditions as well as the cars passing you by and what you're just doing trying to be on your bike. But I want to end on an up note, and as we're talking about some of the great things about cycling, Andy Bishop, Emily Boedeker, maybe you can share just, you know, a quick thought on why you think this is so much fun. I mean, for both of you, this is something that you've made part of your career out of. So it's not just, I'll get on a bike once in a while. This is something that you think is important.
You know, for me, for a good day is a day that I get outside. And so having a bicycle as part of my choices gives me so many more ways in which I can be outside. Just this year, whether I'm cycling to Red Hen Bakery on a Sunday morning with a friend or a tour with my husband in East Montpelier to find the snowy owl that was here, it gives me personally so many options, and it gives me pleasure and joy to help other people have that option in their life as well.
And Andy?
I just love to be outside, and anything on two wheels is really fun. But I, you know, here in Vermont, you can ski, run, hike, paddle, do it all.
Andy Bishop is a former pro cyclist who competed in both road cycling and mountain biking. He, as we mentioned, coaches the champion mountain biker and Vermonter Leah Davison. She'll be competing this weekend at the Catamount Pro Classic. Andy, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Jane.
Emily Boedeker is executive director of Local Motion, a bike advocacy organization in Burlington that promotes riding for fun and for transportation. Emily, thanks so much to you.
Thanks, Jane. It was a great conversation.
And I want to end with a comment from Dave in Burlington, who answered our question about what gets you on the bike, and he said this: the exhilaration of whirring down the road, the meditative ease of cruising by water or a stand of trees, the sweaty sense of self-sufficiency on a hard, slow climb, and the overall sheer joy of it. Those are just a few of the things that get me out there on a bike. And Dave is clearly so inspired. He's a poet. He actually wrote a new book of cycling poems, and it's called Cycling in Plato's Cave. Thanks to all of you who are commenting. You can contribute still by going to the Vermont Edition Facebook page and telling us what you love about riding. Coming up, we're going to get an update on movement in the natural gas pipeline that Vermont Gas Systems wants to build through Addison County. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The discussion over a proposed natural gas pipeline through Addison County has been going on for a couple of years now. And this week, another wrinkle in the debate over the multi-phase project emerged. We learned at the beginning of July that the cost for phase one of the pipeline project was substantially higher than projected, prompting the Public Service Board to invite comments on the increased price tag. Yesterday was the deadline for making those comments to the PSB. And to learn more, we've now asked VPR's Taylor Dobbs to join us. Hi, Taylor.
Hey, Jane.
So what are the numbers we're talking about for the cost of the project?
So originally, as approved by the Public Service Board, the project was set to cost $87 million. But with the July 2nd filing, we learned that that went up 40% to $122 million. And let's keep in mind that this is just for phase one of the project. The project ultimately will go to Rutland if all phases are approved, but phase one just goes from Chittenden County down to Middlebury.
Yeah, go to Rutland. It's sort of a spur to Rutland, but also under the lake and across to the International Paper Mill in Ticonderoga.
Yes, that would be phase two.
Taylor, 40% increase is a pretty substantial increase in the price tag for that phase one of the pipeline. What's driving those cost overruns?
So Vermont Gas attributed that to three main reasons, the major one being construction costs for natural gas projects have gone up nationally, and that was, again, the majority of the increase for phase one, but they also added some increased project management oversight measures, and some ongoing debates with landowners over right-of-way have also fueled some of that.
Do you know why ongoing debates with landowners would cause a significant cost increase?
Well, they're having to use lawyers and go through a lot of proceedings and also, in some cases, pay the landowners more than they anticipated for this right-of-way. So all those add up over time to a little bit over $1 million in this case.
Vermont Gas announced this cost increase 3 weeks ago, and the project had already been approved. Phase one had already been approved. This cost increase that they announced actually called that approval into question. How so?
So state law says that any cost increase of 20% or more that's going to affect ratepayers has to be notified. The Public Service Board has to get notice of that. And so that's what we saw from Vermont Gas on July 2nd. And then after that, all the parties involved in the case have a chance to comment. And so those comments have been coming in, and the deadline for that was yesterday. And so some of them have been calling for the project to be stopped and the certificate of public good, which is what allows them to do the project, to be revoked. The board hasn't taken any steps either way on that yet, but these comments are hopefully going to inform that decision, whatever it does.
And when you talk about the people who are making comments to the Public Service Board, the parties in this, I guess it's not really a case, but in this docket before the Public Service Board, who are the parties we're talking about?
So that's landowners along the pipeline route, environmental groups, and also a competing industry group, the Vermont Fuel Dealers Association. They all weighed in and are against the pipeline and have been from the beginning. In the initial process, they were against it. In this case, some are asking for an entire stop of the project until the Public Service Board can review and maybe reissue a new certificate of public good. Others are just asking for an investigation into why these financial changes occurred and why they occurred now.
Any parties to this project in favor of it commenting as well?
Yes, we have proponents from the very beginning. Rutland's economic development community has been in favor of getting that cheaper fuel down to Rutland. There's also a cheese plant along the route that would be served by this. So there are parties in favor. And of course, Vermont Gas is saying that environmental and economic interests will be served in Vermont with the cheaper fuel that burns a bit cleaner than fuel oil.
Yeah, Vermont Gas has said that it's still going to be an economical choice for people who are able to get on the gas pipeline and get service through it. Some opponents say that, though, ratepayers are going to be on the hook for paying for the increased cost of this project. Ratepayers are represented by the Department of Public Service. Taylor, has the department said anything yet about how it feels?
Yes. So after this increase was announced, they said they were dismayed and disappointed at the cost increase. And that was some very strong language from them. And at the same time, they've been talking with Vermont Gas and trying to figure out what happened here and make sure it won't happen again in phases two and three of the project so that the estimated costs up front are what the costs remain throughout. But ultimately, they said construction should continue here because any stoppage is going to increase project costs even more.
So the Public Service Department right now saying just keep moving forward, even though these costs are higher, it's going to be even more high if we have to stop it. So just keep going forward.
Right. But they definitely are making a strong statement that they want to prevent this from happening later on in the project. They want this to be the only time this happens and not again.
Do you know, Taylor, though, I mean, if one of the major cost drivers is that national construction costs are going up, that may not be something that's under Vermont Gas System's control.
Right. So in that case, they would just want to make sure that any application later on factors that in and allows some room there for the possibility of increased costs beyond what they are at the time of the filing.
So a little bit more of a buffer, perhaps, in the phase two filing?
That could be what we see there, yeah.
The deadline for the Public Service Board to get comments for review was yesterday. That's why we're talking to you today. So what happens next with this project?
So the board will take all these comments under advisement and ultimately make a decision on how the project proceeds, and that could go a number of ways. First, they could take no action and allow the project to go on as it has been approved. They could also revoke the certificate of public good and require the company to go over it again. And then they could split the middle by instructing the company to absorb some of this price increase without letting it be passed to the ratepayers. And we don't know what timeline they're on, but we expect that would go fairly quickly because a lack of certainty on this is not going to serve anyone.
All right. Well, we'll expect you to keep us posted then. VPR's Taylor Dobbs, thanks.
Thank you.
Taylor's been updating us on the latest twists in the long-running debate over a natural gas pipeline project in Addison County. And finally today, before we end the show, we're going to get to some of your messages to Vermont Edition. Last week, two segments garnered a lot of response, and we'd like to share some of that today. Producer Rick Singeri joins me now. Hi, Rick.
Ahoy, Jane. Well, we'll start with our discussion of vaccine goals and parental concerns with Vermont Health Commissioner Harry Chen and Assistant U.S. Surgeon General Ann Schuchat.
We played a soundbite from Middlebury chiropractor Curtis Gross at the top of the show. He said, quote, "Children who don't get the vaccinations have a much stronger immune system than children who do, because children who don't have the vaccinations develop healthy, normal immune systems that aren't distorted by the vaccines," end quote.
We meant to get a response from Dr. Chen during the program, but failed, so we followed up afterwards, and Dr. Chen says, "I don't agree with this statement, and it is not supported by science. We become immune when bodies develop antibodies to disease-causing agents. This can occur from vaccines or from actual infections. The problem with natural immunity is that it exposes our kids to unnecessary suffering and the potential complications of the diseases themselves."
As you might imagine, both during and after the program, there was a robust online discussion about vaccines. Here's just a sampling of some of the comments. Erica says, "Most people don't realize that they're taking the vaccine program purely on faith. Vaccines don't produce very many injuries, and in the majority of cases, vaccines are effective. So we just leave it there and look no further. But it is a far more complex issue than this."
Andrew says, "We believe scientists about evolution and human-caused climate change, and we deplore the conspiracy theories and pseudoscience spread by the uninformed skeptics. But for progressives, it is not considered at all hypocritical to spread conspiracy theories and pseudoscience about vaccines."
A listener with the handle Whole Health says, "I wish the show had talked about how pharmaceutical companies push these vaccines and fast-track them through the CDC, and how difficult it is for doctors and patients to report vaccine injuries."
And finally, this note from Rachel, who posted to our Facebook page, "I wish people in general would stop lumping partial or altered schedule immunization in with no immunization at all, as if it was the same thing. Many informed conscientious parents make a rational choice to follow an altered immunization schedule that minimizes individual risks but still protects the public health."
Moving on to a different topic, also last week we looked at how colleges are addressing the problem of sexual assault on their campuses. A national summit on that issue was held last week at Dartmouth College, and part of our conversation was about whether prevention programs should be focused on the behavior of women or men.
And John writes with this analogy, "I think women in drinking situations should adopt the mindset that one has when using a crosswalk. If you're hit while walking with the right of way, it is 100% the driver's fault, but that does not mean you don't have the power to prevent it from happening in most cases. I'll tell my daughter as she attends college next year that she should avoid putting herself into a vulnerable situation."
And of course, lots of comments still going on about that program as well. You'll find all of them at vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition. And we've got ways that you can give us your feedback still as well.
You can also write to vermontedition@vpr.net or connect with us on social media, Facebook, Twitter at Vermont Edition, those things.
Thanks, Rick.
Hey, you're welcome, Jane.
All right, that does do it for today's show. Tomorrow, Educating English Language Learners. Non-native English children can spend as much as 7 years taking remedial language classes, and for many students, this prevents them from accessing rigorous academic material. We're going to hear from educators on how Vermont schools are handling this challenge, and you can send your comments or your questions about English language learning to Vermont Edition at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.